You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Good morning, sweaty, snotty, teary peeps. I was greeted this morning with a message from the Wendy saying, get me to tell you all about paddleboarding. So come on, Wend, spill. You know how badly I want to try it, but I just fear I'm not going to be able to do the getting up bit and then I'll just look like a knob in the middle of the river.
Well, I think this is the first podcast we've started with you calling yourself a knob, so that's something to be celebrated. Paddleboarding is awesome. I love it. And you were saying you wanted to give it a go on the river, but you were worried about rats, because why?
Yeah, that's my other fear. Rats, dead bodies underneath me, and standing up.
Okay, standing up is really easy. It's a giant paddleboard and you can do it. And it's really good for your core and it's really good fun. And when the kids aren't sat on the front, it's really relaxing. It's really nice. I'm going to come to Oxford and we're going to go paddleboarding and I'm going to make you do it.
Okay, yeah, come and stay for the weekend and bring the board with you.
No! It's like 11 foot. We'll have to hire one.
Oh, wow. So we'll have to go and hire one. Okay. And I won't see any rats and my feet won't touch any dead bodies when I fall in, will they?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
She
All right,
says
I'm holding you to
confidently.
This.
Does anyone know about the prevalence of rats in Oxford rivers?
I think it's pretty bad. My friend was swimming across the river right next to my house the other day. And she said, as she was doing her breaststroke, she looked to the left and there was a rat swimming alongside her.
Lovely. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the person who moved out of her house when she lived in London because they had mice. Literally just walked out.
Oh, I've done that multiple times. I've gone and stayed in hotels in the middle of the night because of the mouse thing. Loads of times.
Let's talk to someone more sane than us.
Yeah, okay. Well, thankfully, we are joined by someone quite marvellous. Her name has been on our guests we want on the podcast sheet forever. But now, Wend, I hope you've been practising your French. We have only gone and got ourselves Angel Strawbridge from Escape to the Chateau. Bonjour, Angel.
Oh, bonjour. Are we going to speak in French? Is that okay? Yeah?
I think...
We'll get the medal of who's the worst.
We should maybe just drop the odd word in, mainly because we're not so great on the fluency issue.
I'd actually like to understand what you say, and my French is crap. So please, can you speak in English?
Well, thank you for having me. And my French is terrible. And our children are absolutely humiliated when me and Dick try and speak French. And Dorothy especially has this incredible French accent because she started school when she was so young that you can't tell that she has an English accent. And Arthur, bless him, he speaks fluent French, but with an English twang. I like it, you know. But honestly, Dorothy completely corrects us all the time. And it's all about the pronunciation. So anyway, I'll call for a minute. I've got the kids. You know, you have your kids so they can translate if you ever move abroad. That's what happens. They've got like brains like sponges.
They do.
So first question, always asked to all of our guests, any sweat, snot or tears in your chateau this morning?
There is always a little bit of sweating because when we get up, we are running around, getting the kids ready for school. And then Dick is very, very military-like and he would rather always be 5 minutes
Colonel
early
than
Dick 5 minutes.
Colonel Dick Strawbridge.
Mr. Dick Strawbridge. And he stands at the bottom of the stairs and he shouts out, it's like a countdown, we are 8:25, we are 8:26, and all of a sudden it all gets a little bit panicky, a little bit hot, and we run out.
That would stress me out.
No, but does it work, Angel? Does it work? Maybe that's what I need to do.
You know what it does? It puts a heebie-jeebies up you, and then it doesn't matter if we are completely on time because we've never ever been late for school. But we've all got this little walk where we go. It's like, you know, that walk that you want to do when you're in a hurry. And we go, sorry. And then we all run over to the car and we all get in the car and then we go and then we're always on time. So that is our, you know, that I guess that is only our sort of sweaty, stressy bit in the morning. But we've sort of got into a bit of a rhythm of it.
That's nice. Well, it's nice that everyone's back at school, isn't it? How were lockdowns for you? Being locked down in a chateau doesn't sound too terrible, to be honest, Angel.
It was weird. So we'd just been on our Dare to Do It tour like last year, And it was, you know, it was popping up as we were on tour. And we got back on a Wednesday, and we were filming like on the Thursday. We had like the camera crew here, and we were just in this sort of like, yeah, I'm sure everything's going to be fine, isn't it? You know, this thing's just going to kind of sort of go into nowhere. And by Sunday, France was on proper lockdown. Macron had sort of locked the country down, and everyone sort of flew home. And I think you're in a bit of a sort of a bubble when you've got a family around you, and you've got to feel like quite blessed at those moments. You do really appreciate the time. You can't help it. It's like we kind of had a guilt about it, that we had a really busy sort of few months, and then we just didn't really know what to do with ourselves. So we got out into the garden and we just sort of cooked and did all of the things that you might do when you're on your summer holidays. And the weather was nice. The downside was that obviously we do weddings here, and we had a lot of there was a lot of bride management,
Angel, that doesn't sound like an easy job to me.
No, do you know, it's not an easy job, because I want to be that person that just makes sure, like, gives them the answers and says everything is going to be okay
and makes all their dreams come true.
She didn't say bridezilla management, so it could have been worse.
Everyone was good, but it's the anxiousness and the worries and not having an answer to a problem that was the big thing. I mean, some weddings we reorganized 4 times. So we was in this naive state where we would say, let's put the wedding back, your May wedding. Let's do it in June. Let's do it in July. You know what? Let's do it in October. So what we did here was that we were really productive, and we dug a trench to the orangery. So we were getting a different electricity capability over there, thinking we'll just do weddings later on in the year. It's fine. And then it kind of just, you know, rollerballed until, yeah, not doing weddings this year at all. And then it went over to, you know, people went into next year. So we've now obviously in our second year of no weddings, and we've got a backup of 2 years that go all the way from 2022 to 2025.
Wow. So that's a lot of weddings on now, right?
Yeah. Do you know, people just, couples just threw them into the future. That's how they managed it. They said, if it goes so far in the future, then actually I don't have to worry about it. And I think that kind of, you know, people having an answer and a solution, it calm people, you know, and that was it. And then, I mean, we have a team here. We had to stay productive, and you have to kind of think laterally all the time. So we did our Make Do Amend show, which came out of the fact that we were getting loads of emails from people just sort of asking advice, and thought, let's do a TV show. And we wrote a book, so, you know, to keep money coming in.
As you do.
Yeah, it was lovely writing it though, just because I'd sort of forgotten a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's a really lovely book. Tell everyone about it.
So a year at the chateau we wrote last year, which was about us finding the chateau and sort of establishing everything up until our wedding. So it was a whole book about the, you know, the tears and the joys and the roller coaster all the way up to the end of 2015. And the book that we have written this year, Living Chateau Dream, it just starts at the end of where the last book ended, and it takes you through the next 2.5 years. And what was interesting when we were thinking about it, we said, we're going to write about 4 or 5 years. And then when you start breaking down what we did, I mean, we were quite tired because, you know, just writing down the bullet points. We had about... Honestly, there was about 2,000 bullet points of things, you know, activities that we'd done. We're like, whew. But with, you know, without the pandemic, we wouldn't have been able to write those books because we were busy sort of hosting weddings. So, you know, you can look at it. I would rather there hadn't been a pandemic. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, but in a way, we've had that time, and you've just got to look at that as a positive. Somehow.
The thing I marvel about you and Dick is you've got 2 kids, which most of us find pretty stressful as it is. most of the rest of us have a nervous breakdown if we have to like get a new bathroom during that time. And yet you're renovating a chateau and putting on weddings.
Well, are you renovating it today? Is there someone, either there's someone locked in a cupboard. What's the banging?
She's locked dick in the cupboard.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh gosh, nothing gets past you two, does it? No. Is dick locked in the cupboard? No, it's, we are top secret, okay, but we are doing our roof.
Oh,
there's nothing glamorous about a roof, though, is there? It's money that you don't, you know, it's not scatter cushions, a roof, is it?
No. I love the cushion moment. I can't wait for it. But there is, there's a seriousness about this that, sort of. We were going to do it in 4 quarters over 4 years. So what we thought, and this is actually weirdly going to answer your first question on this, is that if we've got all the stuff out and we're doing it and we've got the mess and the scaffolding, etc., why don't we just like do the whole roof this year? And that is what we're doing, because then we can put it all away and we don't have to think about it in our lifetime and our children's lifetime. Because this is the bit that I think... we were a little bit choked about when we started doing the roof, is that we are doing it for Arthur and Dorothy, because it's all great, like, yeah, we've got a chateau, that's lovely. But when you inherit it as your children and then sort of realise that you have to do a roof that could cost between 100 and 200K, it kind of like takes away the, you know, the, oh, I've got a chateau. It really, and every house is as good as its roof. But going back to your first question about how we have children and we get a lot done, is that since we've moved in, we have been in constant renovations, okay? And I think every project is all about just having the tools and all the stuff there, because half of the actual preparation is deciding what you want, going to get the stuff. It's the planning and prep. Once you have that, actually painting a wall in your bathroom or tiling a wall, it actually takes not very long. It's all the other sort of stuff that takes along, you know, the time.
Do you want to know how long it took my husband to tile a bathroom? And the bathroom is an ensuite, so it's not cavernous. Take a wild stab in the dark, Angel.
I'm going to say 3.5 years.
Not quite that bad. 8.5 months. Eight and a half months.
See, Wendy, I would have killed him in his sleep. I would have stabbed him to death with something. Why?
He listens to this podcast. This will be great.
Sorry, Tim.
And he's going to stab you. Because he's a perfectionist and he hadn't ever done tiling before. So you can have all the tools and still have no idea, Angel. That it's all well and good saying that once you've done the prep, but we're not you. We're not good at this shit. You're good at it.
Yeah. Well,
okay. I'm gonna channel my inner dick. Sorry. If he was here now, he would honestly say, "I hate DIY, and I'd rather be sticking a pin in my eye or going fishing." I know that he absolutely hates it. But you know, there is doing something for pleasure, like your bathroom in your ensuite, and I'm assuming your husband's has working and doing other things. It's really hard to sort of keep that focus here. When we're doing renovations, it's part of our job, or it's necessary for
business,
an event.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. So we do put sort of more focus into it. And it is more about just sort of getting jobs done. Whereas I'm sure your husband, did you say his name was Tim?
Yes.
I'm sure he just stroked every tile, didn't he? And just like made sure it's right, got his sort of, you know, angle
it
out.
It became like a long running joke. We actually threw a party when that bathroom was finished.
That's
no
funny.
Word of a lie. We had everybody
Angel,
round.
I've got another renovations question. I'm currently in a house that we are renovating, and we've been renovating it for nearly a year and we still haven't moved in. My big problem is we're crap at stuff like this, so we're getting other people to do it. But they never do it when they say they're going to do it. How do you manage other people on these things?
Well, that is quite a French thing, you know. I mean, there's two ways you can do it. You can get used to that, which doesn't always, it's not always like
she's
the,
never
going
to get used
solution.
To that. Just telling
no,
you,
no, I
know. It's not going to happen.
It's valuing people's time. Finding the right people is probably not just for renovation, but it's like, it's the hardest thing in any business, isn't it? Someone who you trust and is reliable and who turns up it's a real biggie. Like when you say, because you're probably, you know, put on, you know, your different clothes because you've got workmen happening that day and you organise the children different.
Yeah.
And if someone doesn't appreciate that, honestly, it just makes you feel so aggravated. And then you get a bit guilty that you shouldn't feel that aggravated, but really you are. So I'd try and find someone new unless you really love them. Do you love them? Are they
I
good?
Do love them. They're really good, but they're just a bit like, oh, so yeah, it's not going to be this week. It's going to be next week now.
I think it's sit down with a cup of tea.
Really?
Have the chat.
Okay, so have a frank, honest, full conversation about how we're all feeling. Yeah?
I'm
this is like therapy.
Right, okay. Darren is going to get invited round for a cup of tea this afternoon.
I'm happy to have that chat with him.
Oh, I'll dial you in, Angel. That'll freak him out.
That'll scare him. You need to get witless.
You say you're going to be here at 9 o'clock. I want you here at 8:50. I've had your coffee.
Darren, we're having a three-way. Yeah.
So do you ever feel isolated living in France? Do you miss home? Do you miss coming back? What, especially
at
the moment?
Is France home?
Is France home? Yeah.
Yeah, it is really weird because whenever we go back to England, we say we're going home. And whenever we've just come back from Ireland and we were going home to Ireland. Mm. And then whenever wherever we are, we say we're going home to France. So I feel like we're, you know, multi-homing. And it is, you know, England will always be our home. We're British. But France very much feels like being home. And I have to say, do we feel isolated, lonely here? Oh, absolutely not at all. However, I do think that you can be. There's this idealistic sort of vision. Many people, they move abroad, they've got this beautiful place in the country, you know, lots of outbuildings, a gorgeous garden, and all of a sudden it dawns on you that you can't walk to the shops, you don't have the same social life, etc. So it has to be a lifestyle change, and it has to suit your lifestyle. You can't put it into a sort of fantasy box. But I tell you the biggest change in my life, this is really genuine, and I say it all the time, not just because I'm chatting to you two and what this podcast is about, but the biggest change, what I did feel a little bit isolated, was when I had my first child, because that's when I just was like, right, your whole life changes completely. And I was still in London, I still had everything at my at my grip, but I didn't have it in the same way. So actually, by the time I'd got used to being a mum, and then we'd moved out from London to Essex. By the time I moved to France, I was in a different mental state than before I had children. So it really happened. I was ready, and I think that's the big thing. I think if you're going to do a move somewhere like this, you have to be ready for it, and you might not have neighbours, and you just got to like the fact that you've got a lot of space and a lot of time.
Who do you mainly hang out with apart from Dick and the kids? Do you hang out with other French people? How near is your nearest neighbour? Like, what does your social life look like?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I have always been a bit of a social butterfly. I mean, I had years, like a decade of raving in London and partying.
Good
you
woman.
Know, I was always
good woman.
But I was, and then you know, when you have children, your life changes like that, and the kids are sort of 7 and 8 years old now, and I kind of enjoy hanging out with them. We don't really. It's sort of a hard question to answer in light of the last couple of years.
Yeah, because no one has a social life anymore.
Yeah, and it is all Zoom. And I'm still very close with my girlfriends, and we often get on a Zoom and have, you know, a drink and a gossip and a catch up on that basis. But before the children are very much integrated in school, and I would, you know, whenever there is a school party, it is obligatory at the end that you all come. And all the parents have a drink and what have you. And we did at the start, when we first moved here, we started getting invited to a lot of dinner parties with what do we call it? The Chateau set.
Hilarious.
Oh, darling.
Official name.
You basically moved into the aristocracy when you moved to France.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt really uncomfortable.
Like, oh, wow.
It was just weird. It just wasn't my thing. And I said to Dick one night, are you having a nice time? And he's like, no. So why are we doing this? We don't have to say yes to everyone. We have to sort out babysitters. You know, by the time I turned up and I've done my hair and everything, I'm absolute shags. So we just, you know, we actually do enjoy doing things as a family. And the kids, like, we try and involve the kids in everything we do. Because weirdly, it makes our lives a lot easier and nicer. Yeah.
So most people probably don't know you're a stepmum as well. How do you navigate that, especially in a two-country, four kids? How many stepkids have you got?
Two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, four in total.
Do you know what? No one has ever actually sort of like officially called me that.
I didn't say wicked stepmum, at least. I did just say stepmum. No.
I think more fairy stepmum.
Yes.
It's weird. Now, this is sort of odd, isn't it? But obviously, they are in my age range. Like, me and James, we get on really, really well. We're always talking about, like, he's a real foodie, completely fabulous. You know, he's really handsome. My nan had a massive crush on him. It'd always be like, whenever we used to go over to my nan's house, she lived in East London, she'd be like, how's James? And we'd be like, he's all right. Yeah, he's good with his wife and kids. Great. Tell me about James.
Oh, I love it.
She's just such an old girl she was. He's got three kids and they are...
So you're a step-granny as well.
Step-granny?
God, yeah.
They are all fabulous. I'm often the one that gets all their prezzies sent to them just because their kids are a similar age to our kids. And one Christmas we had a 1, 2, 3, 4 and a 5-year-old here. It was hectic. We've got Charlotte as well. So it's James and Charlotte, Dick's eldest children. And I love them to bits. And of course, I think this is probably textbook, but when there's somebody new on the scene, and Dick had been separated for many, many years before he met me. But it always feels weird, doesn't it, when there's somebody introduced into the children. It doesn't matter if they're young or old, or older as they were. I still think it is difficult. And of course, it took time. They were really happy for Dick, the fact that Dick was really happy. And then it just, you know, it took a while for us all to settle in with our different dynamics. I am always there for them, and I am I would consider myself to be, I don't know if this is the right thing, I think if you ask them they'd probably say a different thing, but I'd like to feel like that they was a friend, and if they was
nice.
Ever in trouble, that they could ask me, as well as asking Dick, you know, they would feel like that they can ask me any question at any time. And Charlotte would, you know, text me and she'll ask me like a sewing question, and me and James because he's quite an entrepreneur, and if that's what I would probably consider me to be. He'll ask me an entrepreneurial question, and it's quite nice when you get asked a question. You go, oh, so it's quite sweet. So it's good. It's all right. There's no sort of real drama there.
No, we don't want dramas. We want smooth, nice, peaceful, happy families, please. Now, next question is, what's next for Angel? So you've written your books. You've got weddings coming out of your ears. The roof's getting done. Anything else you need to tell us?
On the sideline, Dorothy has drawn some architect plans for swimming pool next year.
OMG, serious?
It's got rainbows everywhere. Dick was just like, that's really very accurate, Dorothy. So we sort of know where it is. I think what the next sort of year holds for us is us getting to a point where we are not constantly thinking renovation. It has to, you know, we've had years and years and years of it, and we've loved every minute of it. But we're getting comfortable here. You know, we've got toilets that work.
It's always good.
We've got light switches that you know, turn them on and lights come on.
It's a novelty.
It was.
Right, Annie, over to you.
Cooking. Who cooks tea? Is it Angel or Dick? I reckon Dick.
It's Dick. And my mum.
Oh
yeah, so my mum often cooks us lunch when they're here and not on there,
because she lives down the road, is that right?
She lives in the outbuilding in the coach house. It's beautiful.
The outbuilding.
We are just renovating one of their main suite at the moment. I've got a new design I've done for my mum and dad that I actually think is one of my nicest ones. It's called the Emerald Flag, the Emerald Fan. It's beautiful.
Wow. Who are you blowing kisses at?
Just come in.
Who is it?
It's my husband.
Oh, guys, they just exchanged the cutest blowy kiss moments. Okay, like two little lovebirds.
Come and wave. Dick's going to get the kids.
Hi, Dick.
Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb. Hello.
You're right.
Everybody's in everybody's heads there. You see, we can't hear a thing. Okay, listen, have lots of fun. I've got to go collect the children.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Are they done with school already?
So we bring them home for lunch at the moment. They didn't always used to, but it's just the way that we are working at the moment. But to quickly finish off your other one, we are having grilled chicken with a bit of curry for lunch, and we're not sure, and a bit of a salad, not sure what we're having for tea. But
I love that the French do lunch, you see.
Yeah.
Annie and I, it'll be a bowl of Rice Krispies or something, but the French do lunch.
Yeah, or a floppy sandwich.
When we first moved here, one of the things that Dick always said was, I'm looking forward to my 2-hour lunches. Like, we will get there. They really, you know, they you go into the cafes and they're just, all the workers are there in their boots with a bottle of cider, having their 3-course meal. And that's just what they do.
That's
and
the
when they
life.
Have, when the children have, It's exactly the right thing. And when the children have their school, when they were having school dinners, it was 3 courses. So like Arthur would come home from lunch and we'd be like, here's your main. And he's like, so where's my start and dessert? Like, they don't know. They absolutely don't know any different. And when I think Arthur was about 3 years old, just started, he was having foie gras. I can never quite say that, but that's we've spoken French there. And he came home and said, "Oh, I've just had brown butter."
Mm. Oh, brown butter, cute. So tea is normally Dick's thing or your mum's thing, is that right?
Tea's normally Dick's, mum's is lunch because we're a bit sort of like busy and we're normally running around doing stuff in the daytime. Yeah.
Also civilised.
I love that you say tea. What time is tea?
Well, I think tea is when kids eat it and dinner or supper is when grown-ups eat it. If I got it wrong, we're going to have loads of letters and emails, people complaining now saying I've said it the wrong way around.
We have an article on Netmums that is it dinner or tea? And it always causes like full-on Facebook slanging matches about whether it's dinner or tea.
But, you know, that's very easy to happen these days, isn't it? So, yes. You know, there's always an argument about something, everything.
It's true. Okay, so the last question is one we ask every guest.
Oh no, I'm not prepared.
You're going to be fine. Imagine you're tucking Wendy and I into bed and we can't sleep, and so you need to sing us your go-to lullaby. Please. What would you sing for Arthur and Dorothy when they can't sleep?
Oh my gosh, I do know it. I would sing The Carpenters, Why Do Birds... Why do birds or suddenly appear every time you are near? and Arthur, if I don't go in and sing it, he's 8 years old now, he asked for that song. He goes, just like me, they long to be close to you. It's a bit cheesy, but I have sung it every single night since he was born. And he loves it, and he closes his eyes and goes to bed. And one day when I was working, he couldn't sleep, and my dad said, you need to speak to him. And I was a little bit tipsy and I had to go to the lobby bar, and I was singing it in the lobby bar on the phone.
I love
to
it
him, close to you.
You know, that song always makes me cry. Wendy, don't say I cry at everything, because I don't cry at everything. But there are some songs that reduce me to tears, and that's one of them. What a lovely choice.
I'm sorry if I've ruined it for you, Annie.
No, you haven't at all. I love it. Absolutely love it. Okay, well, thank you for being an amazing guest, Angel. It feels like we've really caught up.
It really does. I've had such a good time.
Thanks for having me. Hope to speak to you again soon.
Yes.
Lots of love.
Good luck with everything.
To you and your family.
Good luck with the
roof.
Thank you.
Yeah. Au revoir.
Thanks.
Au revoir, Angel.
Bye. Bye.